Hey, Odyssey, I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse Magazine.
Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast. Today, we're learning about the creation of Running the Race, a three-part historical adventure currently releasing in the club.
These episodes were written by executive producer Dave Arnold and Odyssey co-creator Phil Lawler.
And with a pedigree like that, you know these episodes and our conversation are going to be good. Let's talk to Dave and Phil. Well, it's great to have Dave here in the studio with us and Phil on the phone. Phil, join us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
Love talking about this stuff.
We're going to put you on hold for just a second because my first question is for Dave. Dave, you first outlined a story about Eric Little back in 2019. I remember that when thinking that was a really great idea. And most people familiar with him probably saw the Oscar-winning film Chariots of Fire. Mm-hmm. What made you want to tell Eric's story here in Adventures in Odyssey?
Well, there was so much more to his story that wasn't in the film, number one. I did some research on his background, and I thought he came from a very interesting family, his father being a man of conviction. And the approach that I was taking thematically for the shows then was that sort of baton of conviction being passed down from the father to the son, and how it impacted Eric throughout his entire life. He was a man of strong conviction. So that was my theme, and it was just, it felt like a very engaging thing because as we've heard the story of Eric Little play out, it not only played out in his Olympic endeavors, it also played out later in life when he became a full-time missionary and a very sacrificial person as well.
Now, Dave, your episode was set in the gallery at Wits End and involved Renee Carter instead of Bridget Perkins. So what would that version of the story look like?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be altogether that much different in terms of the setting. I was trying to play with the gallery a little bit, make it a little more interesting. And I thought, oh, how much fun would it be if he could actually enter the story as well? And so I had wit tinkering. Actually, the way it played out, it probably is better it didn't go that way because it became too close to the imagination station, really. But in terms of Renee, I saw this for me personally when I was doing this story. It made sense. Renee's from Scotland. Eric Little's from Scotland. She would know about him in some capacity. She might be drawn to his story. And then his story could be another linchpin in her spiritual journey that we have been kind of walking through with her. So I thought, good fit, but ultimately that didn't pan out.
Yeah. Well, we went as far as casting for various roles back in 2019. In fact, our actors for college-age Eric and Eric's father both came from those auditions. Dave, you've listened to tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of auditions over the years. What helps you narrow things down and make a decision when you've got a lot of options for any given role?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're writing something, you hear it in your head. That's part of it for me. And so for me, when I'm casting, I listen for vocal signatures that sort of identify what that person looks like, what their character is. There's so much inside, especially as for a really talented voice actor, they fill so much information inside their voice. And so honestly, sometimes I can listen to like 2 or 3 seconds of an audition and I'm done because the vocal, the sound of this person's voice does not match the character. Whether they're, it could be the best acting performance of all, but if it doesn't match the character, it doesn't help me at all. So that's kind of what I'm looking for.
So you wrote it, cast it, but then didn't record it back in 2019. So why not?
I'd gone through multiple versions, and everybody here liked it, but Phil hated it. And so, and I'm not joking. Phil really did hate it.
Blame me, man. Blame me. Absolutely. And my fault.
No, but the truth of the matter is Phil pushed back pretty hard on it, and I regard Phil as a very, very good writer. So when he had such pushback on it, and I couldn't figure out, because I liked the story. I felt it worked well and whatnot, but Phil was trying, he didn't catch my vision of it, which to me said I hadn't done my job well. At that point, I could have kept pursuing it and kept trying, but I felt like I didn't know what the target was, and so I kind of lost interest in the story.
And you didn't say to Phil, oh, yeah, well, see if you can do better.
No, of course not.
Okay.
No, I regard Phil very highly as a writer, and so when I got that feedback from him, it sort of pulled the thread out of the story for me.
Of course, we're kidding. But for a while, it did seem as though we weren't going to do the Eric Little story. Mm-hmm. And then, Phil, you did decide to pick up the story and run with it, no pun intended. How and why did that happen years after the first effort?
I have rethunk my position, let's put it that way. I really thought that what we needed to do on Odyssey, we've done this quite a bit throughout the history of Odyssey, but what we really need to do is show young people the heroes of the faith, especially modern heroes, especially people who are more in our time. I know that Eric Little was 100 years ago, but 100 years in the life of the church is nothing. Mm. And so it makes him a more modern hero. And I really thought that his story was quite compelling as far as that's concerned. As far as his faith is concerned, especially his later story of missionary, his missionary story.
Oh yeah.
And so I went back to Dave and I said, you know, you should, I think you should rethink doing this, and you know, don't pay any attention to what I said to you all those years ago. And Dave said, you know, quite frankly, he just moved on. I think Dave, you just kind of moved on mentally.
Yep, I did.
And so I said, well, would you object if I did it? And he said, no. I mean, let's see if we can revisit it and make it happen. I think my approach was just a bit different than Dave's in that I think Dave was really concentrating on Eric as the main character, Eric Little, which of course is what the story is about. And I was trying to think, well, how could we maybe take a look at it through Renee? And I started off with Renee's eyes and see and make her part of the story. And David had toyed with that as well when he was doing the gallery, making the characters go into the story and being a part of the story themselves, adopting the personalities of people, historic or made up, and seeing if we could have those characters be more immersed in the story itself. But I think I took that a bit more to heart and kind of reshuffled everything and sort of did it from that point of view.
Right. And then you had to shuffle again because while you started with Renee as the character, the actress who plays Renee wasn't available. So you kind of rewrote it around Bridget.
Yeah.
Why did you choose Bridget?
Well, it's interesting. We were at a recording session, actually, out in California, and Marshall Younger was there. And Marshall created the Perkins family, and I really needed somebody in this role. It was, as Dave said, we were envisioning it as part of Renee's spiritual journey. But I wanted somebody in there, but she couldn't do it. So I went to Marshall and said, what would you think about Bridget being the person who goes back and does this? And I know that he is... at that time and still, he's developing their story arc, the whole family's story arc in terms of their spiritual journeys and a lot of the things that are going on. And so I didn't want to step on any of what he was doing with Bridget or anything like that. But he said, no, I think that that's a really good idea. And I also looked at it as an opportunity to develop Bridget a little bit more too. She's this kind of really on-edge teenager kind of thing. And she wasn't the most approachable person in Odyssey. I think she's a compelling character. I really like her a lot. And so I wanted to put her in this position to go through this kind of situation and see if she was part of a journey of a really faithful and spiritual guy. Part of the problem, I'll be quite frank, that I had with the version that Dave did, nothing against Dave's writing or anything like that, but Eric was so perfect. There wasn't any bad things going on in his life. And so to make his character drama needs conflict, and he had conflict in terms of external conflicts, things that were being piled on top of him. But I really wanted somebody who was struggling, like Bridget, just struggling with life issues and things that are going on, to see a person like that, to really have a close encounter with a person who is like Eric Little, who was so... devoted to Christ, that he would not run in the Olympics on the Sabbath because he felt it was against what God wanted him to do, and then also see his incredible life later on as a missionary in China and what happened to him during World War II when he was captured and held by the Japanese in a camp. And it was it ended up being just, I think, the right decision all the way down the line.
Yeah, well, Eric's three-part story is cleanly divided into three acts. First, Eric as a boy and a student, then mm-hmm. Eric as an Olympic runner, and Eric as a missionary in China. Dave, was the story from the beginning always structured that way? And Phil, maybe why continue to focus on those particular seasons when you picked it up?
Yeah, it made the most sense to me to split it up that way because the formation of Eric on the front end was the vision of that first story for me. The realization of the formation in his Olympic life, and then in his later life, the last chunk of his life, he fulfilled his father's vision for him as a person. And it just felt like a comfortable way. There was so much story to tell. I mean, it was just tough to pack it into anything shorter than that. That sequencing made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. What the way it all kind of ended up being is all of the stuff that Dave just said, and then what we see when Eric Little faced probably his biggest trial, which was at the end of his life, it's great to call back on all of those things earlier on. So that was one of the things that I was doing with this script was him calling back to his childhood, his calling back to his coaching, his calling back to all those things when he's facing such a terrible, terrible trial in this concentration camp, in this Japanese camp, and he can and now we can see it because we lived through it too, and what was wonderful is that we can enter into the story through Bridget, and she also recalls all of these things that happened because she plays key roles throughout his life, and so she actually is there at the witnessing what's going on at the Japanese camp as well, and it's just kind of this really strange thing that she has the same memories that he does. Just from a different point of view. And so she's able to relate to him and what he's going through really, really well.
And this being a three-part episode, and again, dividing up so perfectly, you still couldn't explore everything about Eric's life because it was such a rich life that he led. So does anything stand out in either of your minds about parts of Eric's story that you had to leave out that you wish you could have told?
Well, I told everything in my part that I liked, but
I did some more research as well online of Eric's story, and I there was parts of his courtship with his wife that I think would have been really nice to have done a little bit more with that. Also, some of the races. There were other races that he, even after the Olympics, there were other races that he did and did remarkable things in those races as well as what he did in the Olympics. So that would have been a lot of fun to deal with too. But I think ultimately, you know, cutting only helps.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
editing is a good thing. So we had to get it down for time, and then it also just makes the story more concise.
Yeah, well, we all have details about our lives that no one would think to put in a biography. Of course, our fans are going to ask about them anyway. Mm-hmm. So this is a good time for our
TRQ,
which stands for Totally Random Question. Mm-hmm. And Wiley wants to know of you two gentlemen, not including Jesus, who is your favorite person in the Bible?
Mm. Do you want to go first in this, Phil?
That would be a really that is a really difficult question to answer.
Because there's so many different options.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think one of the most compelling stories for me, and I don't know if it's my most other separate favorite person, but I think one of the most compelling stories is the story of Job, interestingly, because of what he went through and the journey he went through with all of his, you know, so-called friends, and then how God redeemed his life in such a much more powerful way. Just reading through scriptures last year, I spent a lot of time in Job, and it just became alive in a new way to me, in a way that it hadn't before. So I think that's probably top of mind for me right now. Phil? But I wouldn't say he's my favorite second. I mean, Jesus takes the top 10 slots at least.
Well, Wiley was smart enough to be able to separate Jesus, put him in a class of his own.
And, yeah. You know.
Phil, how about you?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think it's got to be a tie between David and the Apostle Paul. I think it would have to be a tie between those two. They both have such compelling stories. David is just this go-getter kind of guy and did everything and lived life to the fullest. And then, of course, the Apostle Paul, again, like Dave was saying about Job, the whole redemption part of the Apostle Paul's life. It's the most incredible story probably of Christendom. Here's somebody who was spouting murder. He was going to kill Christians and has this amazing, unbelievable conversion so that he becomes, you know, the chief expositor of Christianity to the world. And, you know, we're still reading the Holy Scripture. Most of the New Testament is Paul's writings. And so those two I'd have to say tie for second place.
Appreciate those answers, guys, and I appreciate Wiley's question. Very thought-provoking. Yeah.
The voice of Wilson Knox is Greg Jabbar, and he does a great job. He plays six different roles in these episodes. Yeah. Did you guys ever think that maybe when you're working on the script that these roles would be cast as with different actors in them? Or has it always been one of those things where you're going to embed Wilson in it?
I didn't have Wilson, I don't think, in my script at all. Mine had Witt and Renee, and I thought of using Witt in a couple places, but no, I really thought of, I mean, other than Renee being in a few sections where she actually became a character, I had many more characters actually cast in my version.
Hmm.
Maybe someday we'll do my version.
Did you guys have a favorite? I mean, looking back over Greg's performances, was there one of the characters that stood out?
I think the last one. What was his name? Watson, Phil?
Yeah.
The one in the concentration camp?
I like Watson, too.
Yeah, Watson, who is coming up in part three. And it's a little different than the first two parts in that he doesn't directly address Bridget. So if we're not listening carefully, we might not know that that's actually Wilson.
Yeah.
Well, that's just Greg. He's so good.
Yes,
he is. You know, he's so good at playing different characters. He's eminently directable. This is what's wonderful about Greg Jabbar is that he's so talented, but he will listen to everything that you want him to do and then do it and do it brilliantly. He'll do it far above what even you thought he could do. And so he's just so capable of doing that. And again, one of the things that I wanted to do with my version as well was not only have Bridget go in, because she would be reticent to do this. She's never been in the Imagination Station before. She doesn't really know what's going on in the Imagination Station. And have Pastor Knox say, don't worry, I'll be around too. It's fine. Don't worry about that. So that way she's feeling more comfortable and as though she's not being trapped into doing something or anything like that. And then it's always fun, of course, to have her go, wait, you know, I'm supposed to be this character, but I know that guy. And then them talk to each other about stuff. And then the other characters come in. And so they're having to go back into their roles.
Oh, yeah. And Bridget learns a lot in this episode. It's funny you mentioned Paul, because Paul wrote about it, right? Being content in every situation. And Paul experienced a lot in his life. And, of course, Eric Little as a modern example. So Bridget learned something. What did both of you guys learn as you were writing these stories? Did anything stand out?
I learned to let Phil write it instead of writing it.
I learned to let Dave do all the research.
For me, I think it did come down to the level of commitment. There was no hesitation in this man, really. I mean, and that comes down to what Phil was talking about, what he felt like was a weakness in my script was that he came across as too perfect. But I didn't see him as perfect. I did see him struggling, especially when his spouse and his kids had to leave you'll see in part three. But he was so very, very committed to his faith that nothing could sort of unhinge him from that. He was a man of strong integrity, and even with all of the incredible pressure, and I don't think we can understand the pressure he was under from so many people, governments, just people on the street. I mean, he had a lot of pressure bearing on him, but he was unflinching. And in the day and age that we live in, that's a good example for us to follow.
I agree totally. Eric Little is, again, this is one of the reasons I came back to Dave and said, I think we need to do this story. You know, you should revisit this, because we need those heroes of the faith. We need people who exemplify these scriptural passages that we talk about a lot. But this is also something that I really got out of Eric Little and just researching his life and all of the amazing things that happened, and really wanted to transfer to Bridget for her to experience, which is the idea of contentment. Nobody, come on, how can anybody be content in these terrible, terrible situations? How can anybody be content? That's Bridget's point of view from the very beginning. How can anybody be content just with life? So many bad things happen. You're going to tell me that, that there's somebody out there who was really content and it was okay? Yeah, there was. There was somebody who was out there who was like that. There's somebody who exemplified that in their life despite overwhelmingly awful things happening to him. All the way throughout his life, he kept the faith and he was content. And it's that positive go-getter that Dave was talking about. He was all in. Right from the get-go, and you really see how that served him well in his life, and that he really was a good and faithful servant. He was this truly good and faithful servant. You have no doubts that, you know, that Jesus was going to welcome him into the kingdom, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Eric Little did live out Philippians 4. And again, mm-hmm. I think we all know that verse, right? I can do all things through him who gives me strength. But right before that, that's when Paul is talking about being in want, being in plenty, living out, I mean, all the different trials he went through. And again, I think that's something that Eric truly exemplified as well.
That's true. Very true. And I think for kids today, especially, because identity is something that is so squishy and they're trying to figure things out. Eric knew who he was and whose he was, and it directed everything from that point on.
Yeah, and I do want to say something really quickly, because I've been teasing Phil throughout this podcast, but I think he was the absolute right guy to take this over the finish line. I thought he did a fabulous job on the script, and the adjustments he made really brought this script out to life. So thank you for doing that, my friend.
Very, very welcome. I enjoyed it immensely, and I regret that you didn't do it the first time. I regret
me
that
too.
Now, and I'm glad to have a moment of redemption here. Yay.
Well, we've enjoyed you guys immensely. Appreciate you coming into the studio, Dave, and Phil for patching in by phone. Thank you so much, and look forward to having everybody in the same room together again real soon. You can hear parts 1 and 2 of Running the Race in the club right now. The finale, part 3, releases May 1st.
What else is new in the club?
Some spring reading. We're releasing The Last Chance Detective's book, Canyon Quest. Chapters 1 through 12 are available now, and 13 to 18 release tomorrow. There are plenty of cliffhangers in this book, so you'll want to keep reading all the way to chapter 30.
And speaking of cliffhangers, if you're listening to Odyssey on the radio or online, part 3 of the Rydell Realizations airs this weekend. We'll be talking about the production of this big adventure on our next podcast, so make sure to listen to the finale first.
Oh, here's a sneak peek.
On the next adventure in Odyssey, the team is in trouble.
Marvin?
I was expecting Marion, but you'll do, you little thief.
You two need to get to Odyssey Memorial Hospital right away.
Why?
Zuzu's here. She's been hurt.
Maury could go to juvenile detention for this.
That's the whole idea.
The Rydell Realizations comes to an exciting conclusion. Don't miss the next adventure in Odyssey.
Nope, I won't miss that story. It's online and on the radio this weekend.
And it's available in the club, along with the rest of Album 76, Keep It Together. But that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
Find out more about Running the Race, the Rydell Realizations, Album 76, and more at our website, adventuresinodyssey.com.
Or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Adventures in Odyssey has taken generations of children on an exciting journey, all the while sharing biblical principles and activating their imaginations. Now, in 2024, we'll be airing our 1,000th episode. To celebrate, we're inviting every member of the Odyssey family to join us for one grand party. This spectacular two-day event is packed with fun and excitement for Adventures in Odyssey fans of every age. Partygoers will enjoy an unmatched, immersive experience into the town of Odyssey. Meet and greets with cast and crew, Q&A sessions, trivia contests, and more. The party is topped off with a live episode recording starring fan-favorite characters. It's all happening on August 2nd and 3rd in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tickets for one grand party are going fast. Learn more at onegrandparty.com.